No, we'll go for the littlest part of the color on it, and it's now an orange. Hello. So it's
Hello. All right. So, cool. All right.
Fuck yeah. All right. Great podcast.
The Hello Podcast.
Hello. Is this thing on? Check 1, 2. Friends, fans, followers, leaders, and triple leaders. I'm here with
Ebo Brewer,
former Marine. Hell of a good fucking comic. Funny as shit.
Now I do what I can.
Yeah, well, dude, you're fucking funny. And now you're doing the Twitch thing, you know?
Yes, so. yes. I am doing the... What did we do? It was like we've been thinking about a name for it. And we had a great name. And I forgot it immediately.
Really?
Yeah.
So, like, do some rundowns of what the name could possibly be. Because... it's pretty badass. I walk in the comedy store. All right, so for you guys that don't know, the comedy store's basement, like when I first started hanging out here about 10 years ago, this place was scary as shit. Yeah. You would never want to come down here, and you just heard horror stories where people got mutilated by fucking gangsters back in like the Bugsy era. Mm-hmm. And now we have an awesome podcast studio, and now you're doing the Twitch. You got a couch. What's your Twitch name for people to follow you, by the way?
Well, it's the comedy store. Like, it's you could follow me on the comedy store, and just you could follow me on at IBO Comedy, Ebo Comedy at Ebo Comedy, on IG, Twitter, Facebook, all of that. That's the same handle. Keep it consistent. But I haven't got my own Twitch channel. See, Twitch frustrated me off top. Right. Like when I tried to create a login and everything to start doing the shit, it was just difficult. Maybe just because I'm old.
Yeah. How old are you, if you don't mind me asking?
I'm 39. I just turned 39 a couple days ago.
Okay, I'm older than you, so I'm fucking feeling old. No, just kidding.
Well, dude, I'm black. I'm black man old.
Yeah, well, you're lucky. Because
we're like, we don't.
Nah, black man.
We don't get to these ages
unless you're on crack. And that's the only time it cracks.
No, shit. But yeah, it's the Comedy Store Twitch channel. I'm at noon every day. So, yeah, come check me out.
Fuck yeah, man.
Check me out. I'm playing all sorts of games. I play mostly Call of Duty, but I do Tomb Raider. I do story modes usually on Sunday. I do story mode Sundays where we just go through a story of a game.
That sounds like an episode of something cool as it is, story mode Sundays.
Yeah.
That should just be like the, you know, that'd be fucking awesome if you just put that on YouTube. Like you did the Twitch thing, and then after that you put story mode Sundays. Like that's a traditional thing. Like by the time you got done, you just... drop it right into your YouTube page, you know, instantly. That'd be fucking cool.
That sounds like a good idea.
Story mode Sundays, you know? I don't know.
I may try to do that.
It sounds cool as shit. Like, which ones are you doing? Like, are you doing the Red Dead?
Here's the thing. I want to enjoy Red Dead because so many people I'm friends with enjoy Red Dead.
Right.
And I don't. It's too slow for me. It's not for people with short attention spans.
That's like how I felt about a lot of the Final Fantasies, I think maybe after about 7. You know, from then on out, it just, the pace was, what the fuck's going on? I know I got a lot of people that hate me now.
I can deal with Final Fantasy.
After about 8, it was like, what the fuck? This is just too slow.
I mean, because at least you can, like, fast travel, but you got to ride the shit out of that horse, and you got to take care of the horse, you got to feed the horse, you got to watch the horse. If you fall, like, I'm a big fan of the clothes my avatar wears.
Oh, okay.
I'm a gamer fashionista, if you will.
Right. And I think that's been a big thing now because everybody wants skins for their guns and clothes It's like it's like the newest thing. People pay good money just for something they play on the video game. It's not even an extra level in the game. It's just it's either a nice trench coat or a new fucking color on the gun. You know.
I worked my ass off to get diamonds on my fucking guns.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. Now my shit is bling the fuck out. And I feel like I shoot better.
Fuck yeah.
Look better, shoot better. That's my motto.
And you shoot a bunch more people, like, was it 100,000 or 100 million? Then you get a platinum gun.
No. It's a whole bunch of different. You got to get, for each weapon in the class, you got to get 100 headshots.
Yeah.
And after you get the 100 headshots, then you got to do all these different challenges, like 50 kills with no attachments, 50 kills with 5 attachments, and then 5 kills in a row, and then... double kills, all this stuff. And when you do that, then you get the gun. I sound like a complete nerd right now.
It's all right. Most people understand.
That's cool.
that they
get
it. I
don't give a shit. I've done cool shit.
Except for the old vets, like, what the fuck are these guys talking about? You know? But speaking of the old vets, so I like the Black Ops, but I still dive back into the World War II game. You know, the
WW2 one, the one that came out before? That's a pretty good one.
That's dope as hell, dude.
I was on that for a while. Yeah, I'm still
on it, man.
Yeah.
And the thing is, too, is like I downloaded it, bought it, and all that other shit, and then I just totally forgot about it. And my cousin's like, "Yo, you should." My cousin Ryan, RedMet33, if you want to follow him. But so my cousin just hit me up. He's like, "Yo, dog, I'm on this thing," and I'm like, "Fuck these games, they're all the same." And then I started playing. I'm like, "Oh shit, this, you know, it's got that good feel." So I like how those games, they took the accuracy, a lot of the accuracy from World War II, and put them on there.
Yeah.
From the guns and the way the guns actually sound.
Yeah.
To a good idea what future warfare would actually be like in Black Ops. You know, it's got some side weird shit going on, but I can actually see a lot of these fucking real weapons happening, man.
Yeah, yeah. They still got guns that are like old. Because that's the thing about the military, man. If it ain't broke, you don't fix it, you know? Just like fucking, like a 50 caliber machine gun. This has been the same since its fucking inception.
The only thing they've done was change some of the shit from the headspace and timing. That's about it. They got like, and that was like the biggest headache, man, was the fucking, you know, nickel dime, whatever you want to call it, headspace and timing and shit. So you're a Marine, man. Like, how long did you do?
I was a United States Marine. I served from 99 to 04.
Fuck yeah.
I'm a Iraq war veteran. I served during the initial invasion of Iraq.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was my deal. I was stationed at Camp Pendleton pretty much the whole time.
Okay, cool, man. Who are you with?
MASS 3.
Okay. What's that mean to?
Marine Air Support Squadron.
Right.
So what we did is we worked in this, the agency we worked in was called the DASC. It's called the Direct Air Support Center. And what we do is we process requests for aircraft from ground units, like anything from troops, troop movements, logistics, murder, medevacs, everything. Like, you know, I like to think that we saved more lives than we took.
Yeah.
You know, because we did a lot of medevacs on both sides, you know, and that was the lion's share of what we did. But we did a lot of, you know, dropping bombs on places.
Right. Well, that's a lot of people think is no matter what you do in the military, it's automatically to kill people. You know, it's like, I mean, a lot of stuff. You're doing nine lines, you know, you're trying to get people the fuck out of there and you're helping there. And then like being a CB, dude, we built more stuff than actually, you know, built hospitals to help more people.
To be fair, a lot of the medevacs was shit that a lot of it was just cleaning up messes that we made. You know
right?
It was like, those people would have been fine if we hadn't been there in the first place. Like, I'm not acting like I'm a goddamn saint. No. I was like, I was just saving lives, man. I'm like, but you blew up my village.
I like how you're...
Why are you bringing up old shit?
Dude, that happened... Hey,
that's like happened shit. 20 minutes ago.
That's like Friday. Oh, no, but that's different than like Friday. Oh, shit, man. So, like, did you go to any other place? You went to what part of Iraq were you?
What was there during the initial invasion? So, I went from... We came in to Kuwait, and then we stayed in Kuwait for a month or two.
Right.
And then we invaded, and I went from southern Iraq up through Baghdad, and the furthest north we went was to Crete.
Okay. Yeah, so you had a lot of bees up there too, man. So you guys were like part of the convoy units, or you were actually doing
the... convoy. I'm part of the convoy units. Like, we'd set the way we worked is we had to, you know, maintain comm with all the units. So there was two.
Okay.
We were in two units. We had a main unit and then a forward unit. And we would kind of piggyback to maintain comms. So while we're invading, so we could always maintain comm with all the Marine units that we were supporting.
Right.
So there are times when we'd be the most forward unit, the deepest into Iraq, of any unit, and that was always scary. That's
cool. Because you're, well, I mean, it's scary, but it's cool, too, because, yeah. you know, you're like, you're in it, man. And then you got, you know, leapfrogging, basically. Because mm-hmm. then you have your other cats, and then you're the forward deployed.
Here's the thing. This is how we knew when we were a little too far forward. All the brass would just helicopter out. Like,
oh, shit, yeah.
Like, I was like, wait, hey, where'd all the generals go?
Oh, okay.
Oh, shit.
That's how you know
they're
that...
right around the corner, aren't they? They're right on the other side of that berm, aren't they?
So they're like, hey, let's do the picture op real quick. And then, all right, let's get back to the rear.
Yeah, because we prided ourselves on having, you know, one of the most complete, the most complete picture of the battlefield.
Yeah,
because we have to make sure that we're dropping shit in the right place, and we don't have any radars or anything electronic. We just do it by checking in, by maintaining comm
right.
with all the units, and so we trust that they are where they say they are.
Yeah, and you have to have your fucking grids down, everything, man.
Yeah, so a lot of bigwigs would come in and look at our map to see where people were, because our map was, you know, one of the most accurate maps.
And then if
in a real time situation.
So yeah, man, that S3 board's important as fuck, man. Because mm-hmm. then that's got to be fucking crazy too, yeah. man. That's got to be kind of ballsy. Because that's the thing too. We always tell the junior troops that want to rely on technology. It's like, yo, if your battery's dying, you're using a GPS, you're fucked. You know what I mean? You still have to be able to use old school fucking lensetic compasses and use real fucking maps.
Yeah. Know what the hell you're doing. Map's worthless in a desert, though.
Well, that's true.
Fucking yeah, the wind blows but, and the wind blows and the terrain changes. Yeah, you know
yeah.
what I'm saying?
Well, in most places, unless like it, depending on what part you're at. But yeah, if you're in just nothing but desert,
yeah, it's like,
I totally agree. But if you're rolling to like Fallujah or something, you understand which building. No, okay,
yeah.
Alpha 27's right here, and fucking Bravo 34 is there. You know what I mean?
So. Yeah, but I remember speaking of a recent news. Related, there was one point where I was able to meet General Mattis. I talked to him for a moment.
He's a bad motherfucker, man.
Yeah, he's a cool dude. He's sneaky.
Yeah?
He's a very, like, all right, here's what happened. We had set up a position, and then we had to dig in. So I was building a little fighting hole, you know? So it was, for people who don't know, combat is doing absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
So I was digging. This whole hole, and that was what I was doing for the next couple of hours.
Yep.
So I start digging it, and then I'm like, well, you know what? Let me put a grenade sump in there. Never used a grenade. I only remember that from fucking Marine combat training is a grenade sump. It's like it's this little hole that if you use a grenade, you kick the grenade into that little thing, so it just directs the blast like in one direction, so you can move. So I dug the grenades up, and then I was like, oh, let me put a little shelf right here, you know, because you put the shelf that you put your tripod on when you, I don't got that. I don't got that in there. It's just for me.
Fuck it.
So I put that there, and then I was like, you know what, and it had this little hard sand right here. I'm like, let me make a little rifle rack. So I made a little rifle rack. I was just fucking, I was Martha Stewart in that shit. And then all of a sudden, right behind me on my hip was General Mattis, and I'm like 6'3". So it's like all of a sudden it's this little dude.
How tall is General Mattis?
Dude, I don't know, man. He's not tall at all. Like he's just
he's like 5'9".
It was like a dude that was like right under my. He was like under my arm.
Right.
And I'm like, and he's dirty and shit. So I'm not thinking it's a general. I'm like, who the fuck is this dude? What's up? And that's the thing. As I look up, I'm like, what's up, man? Oh shit! Like it's like you look over, and I you know they have the subdued ranks, so it's like not shiny,
right?
You know,
right.
So I'm like, sup, man? And then I look down and I see like one, yeah. Oh shit! Oh, these are stars. This ain't no dude. And I'm like, oh, sorry, calm down there, devil dog. So I'm like, all right. He's like, I tell you what, this is a damn fine fighting hole you got here. I feel like he was a little turned on. I'm like,
probably was, dude.
He's like, what's your name, Marine? I'm like, I was like, Brewer. He's like, hey, Brewer, this is a damn fine fighting hole. This is a damn fine fighting hole. I'm like, I appreciate it. I'm glad you.
That's fucking cool.
I'm glad
man.
You enjoyed my fighting hole. So,
He grabbed your E-tool. He's like, yeah, it's a complete E-tool length. Yeah. It's at a 23-degree angle. Mm-hmm. It's perfect.
It's perfect.
No, that's what, like, you're so right, though, because most of combat or even training for combat, it's always hurry up and wait, hurry up and wait, hurry up and wait. And I don't know how many times I was digging, like, I call it my lazy boy, because, you know, you dig in your side of your fighting position just so you got your fucking, so that way you have a good place to lean back when you're sitting down.
Yeah,
that's gotta be badass though, Mattis, man. It's
It was like, so the former Secretary of Defense is a big fan of the way I dig holes.
Hell yeah, dude, that's t-shirt worthy, you know. That's to be like Ebo stickers, and then Mattis's knife hands, like, great fighting hole. Yeah, I was sad to see him go, man. You know, I mean, in current news, I try to, because everybody blows all the internet and everything up with politics and shit, and it's just like, we can spend 5-6 hours easily debating that. And
he was the one constant.
But
like,
yeah, he was, yes.
Like, everybody, like, no matter where you stood, really, you at least respected him.
Right, right.
You know what I'm saying? And he didn't deal with the bullshit.
No.
Like, Trump would say something, he's like, nah, I'm not going to do that.
That's not how it works. How it works. And then I totally agree.
And then even the way he resigned was classy as fuck. You know what I'm saying? He's just like, look, you deserve somebody who is better in line when way you do things. And I'm like, yo, that's some fucking.
That was classic.
Yeah. I'm like, just, all right.
That's some pimp shit, dude.
Yeah. Just like, I can't deal with this.
You deserve.
I don't deal with this nonsense.
Somebody. I was just like, oh my God. But yeah, no matter if you like Trump, against Trump, you're like, well, at least Mattis is there. You know what I'm saying? No matter what.
At least Mattis is in charge of the weapons.
Yeah, you know, the most sane, logical motherfucker.
Is in charge of things that will blow shit up. Like,
no,
all right.
Shit. It doesn't matter.
It's like he's just sitting there like, stop that. Just smacking his head. Stop that. No, you can't.
No, the sad thing is like, I see him doing that, dude. I see
him. Like, don't touch that.
They're in a bunker. And it was like, hey, what's this red button do?
Stop that.
And then he just fucking smacks Trump's hand away from the red box.
Give me that. Put that down.
No.
Wait outside.
Sorry, you can't do
that.
Wait
outside.
I just see him sitting in like the Oval Office around a table like we're sitting right now, and he just looks at him like, look, dude, if you're not gonna listen to what I'm saying, why the fuck am I here? You know, and that's kind of like how I, not in those exact words, but in his head, why am I here if you're not even gonna listen to me?
You know? I feel like he'd just be in the war room playing Candy Crush.
Like, who, Trump or Mattis?
Mattis. Because it's like, all right, man, this shit isn't gonna.
All right, this is fucking done.
This is stupid. I know what I'm gonna do.
I've been playing this fucking Candy Crush game so long.
It's like, dude, what do you do? I'm like, man. I was doing reports and everything like that, but I realized he was a fucking psychopath, so I just played Candy Crush until.
And he's like, hey, Melania, can you lend me some lives? You know, because you send each other lives in Candy Crush. No, you know what he's doing? He's going to listen to the podcast, he's going to fucking find you, and then he's going to be like, I found that guy who made the best foxhole I've ever seen in Iraq. And he's going to start fucking playing Call of Duty with you, man. And you guys are going to be like kicking in doors and shit. I swear to God, I'll fucking kill every one of you in here. I come with tears in my eyes.
And your next Secretary of Defense, Ebo Brewer.
The most, right? The most.
So you're not even a general. You couldn't even get past Lance Corporal. I'm like, doesn't matter. You see my fighting holes?
See this shit? What's up, man? At least I understand the dynamics of ergonomic warfare. Oh, man. So, like, that had to have been pretty cool what you did in the Marines, though, man. Because, I mean, I was just thinking about that, though. It's just you guys had the constant eye on fucking everything, man.
Yeah.
So like, how long were you in theater then? Like,
I was only in theater for about 6 months, I believe. Like, time in Iraq wasn't that long. It was just very intense.
Right. Well, that's 6 months. You've seen more shit than probably most people I know. You know what I mean? Because you're in the initial fight, you know, and shit was happening nonstop. So your 6 months is like...
Well, I saw the shift from a linear to a nonlinear war.
Right.
You know? Like, we had dudes, like, when we first invaded, there were people in uniform. There was, you knew who was the bad guy and who wasn't the bad guy. And then as the, like, within, like, a week, then they were just throwing their uniforms off, dressing like civilians and just popping us from different places and shit like that, and just turned and went straight to, like, guerrilla warfare. And, you know, just there was no front anymore. Anybody could get it. It was just were just out there gangbanging.
It was like it was weird because there was no front lines. Like everything was like you got fobs and then what's outside your fob. That's basically how it felt by the time I got there, you know, because you guys did the initial shit. I didn't get there till 05, you know, and that's, you know, so like you guys were in the real shit. I was still recruiting. Like I was in NRD, Ohio, you know, went 3 years.
Doing God's work.
Oh, yeah. My dad.
I said that sarcastically.
Oh, of course. It's like my dad was my dad wasn't doing well. I was in battalion in California. I was like, dude, I need to get the fuck out of here. I was gonna get out, and then I took orders to go help my dad. I was like, you know, I was gonna get out, dude. Cool. And they're like, you wanna take recruiting? I was like, I'll shovel shit, you know, to go help family first, man. Mm-hmm. You know, and they're like, all right, I don't give a fuck. I'll do whatever job. And so I did. And what was cool for me is I knew I'm going back to being a CB because recruiting is like, it's the best and worst job I've ever had. Yeah. It just sucks, but it's fun because the people, your recruits, your debt pool, that's the shit. Some of the recruiters that you're with, good people, but the rest of it's just dirty. Yeah,
some of them are fucking ass clowns, man. Dude. Like the I had such a horrible experience with my recruiter. He's a fucking douche,
so
man.
Douche. Where'd you get recruited from?
I got recruited out of Northwest Indiana.
Okay. No shit. Like Gary or
It was
South Bend or some shit?
No. Like the Gary area.
Okay.
Yeah. Because I went to high school in Griffith, Indiana, which is close to Gary.
Okay, cool.
It's funny because, like, Gary's surrounded by, like, pretty... It's, like, the worst city.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, it's... You ever play the game Silent Hill?
Oh, yeah.
You know how you go into like the hell world?
Yeah.
It's like you're walking on a regular street and then all of a sudden everything's fucking fucked up. Like just that quick. That's how it is crossing from Hammond, Indiana into Gary, Indiana. Like one side of the tracks is a nice paved, smooth road. And you just go over the tracks and all of a sudden it's fucking, it's nonsense. It's like four different types of fucking... Concrete on the
it's like, Armageddon.
What the fuck is Armageddon?
Did like a bomb hit here?
What it looked like downtown Gary looked like downtown Baghdad after we invaded it, and that's after it's been bombed for months.
Right. That's like parts of Detroit. That's what reminds me of. Or Toledo.
There's neighborhoods where just the vegetation took over.
Yeah, it's like, fucking weird, man.
It's like a tree and the lawn ate the house.
You can't even tell train tracks were there because like fucking the shit grew up through it, man. So, all right, you're in Gary, Indiana, and your recruiter was a piece of shit. Oh
yeah, he was. He lied, and I don't problem like with that lying, but it's like he blamed me for him not being able to do his job. Like my job was to get people there,
right?
As a recruiter's assistant.
Okay.
And it was his job to sell people.
So you're in the delayed entry program at this time?
No. This is when I was on...
Harper Rap or whatever duty?
Like recruiting duty. Like just, you know. Assistants. And so I was doing recruiter's assistance. And I was there. And he cut my shit short. Because he said, oh, well, I wasn't able to sign anybody. So, you know, I'm like, dude, I've been bringing people in. And he's like, those are just your friends doing. I'm like, isn't that what the fuck is supposed to be? Like,
yeah, exactly. That's like that's awesome.
I get people to come in and you can't sell it.
Yeah.
That's on you. And then you're going to tell me that I'm not doing my job? Fuck you, you bastard. I don't. Because before, I was a Lance Corporal and he was a sergeant, so I couldn't say shit. But now, I see the dude, you're a fucking piece of shit. If you hear me and you remember Lance Corporal Brewer, come see me, motherfucker. You want shit.
No, that sucks. Because when I was, I did, like I said, I did 3 years and I started in Toledo and went to Fremont, Ohio. And I would tell if I had anybody in, I would just, most of them, depend on what's going on. If they're like, because you can kind of tell who's there just to fuck off and who's there to have fun and stuff like that. So I'd be like, look, dude, just call in on fucking whatever days. I usually don't care because I'm doing fine as it is. If you bring somebody in, that's cool, whatever, because. But if you do bring something in, that's awesome for me because I just put it down on my report saying, okay. And you should never, like, if you're going on recruiting duty, if you're listening to this and you're going on recruiting duty, because I know a couple of you guys are, and some of you guys are on the bag right now, is like, I always saw that if you brought somebody into my office, it's going to make me look better because I can actually put them on a schedule and say I did have an interview today.
Mm-hmm.
But the whole thing is as a hometown assistance recruit helper guy, your job is not to sell the military. Your job is to sell the recruiter. You know what I'm saying? You sell the recruiter, and then the recruiter sells the military. You know what I'm saying? That's the whole job.
Yeah.
But. You know, so he's a failure, you know, because he was like totally, you know, basically misappropriating his resources. And that's, I hate to say it that way, but if you're actually going to bring people in, you're my boy, period. I would have Madden tournaments in my office and I would not talk military just to have fun and just shoot the shit and build rapport with these cats.
Yeah, not that it wasn't that kind of party. He had fun. He would brag about shit that he was doing. And I'm like, right, that's great. What do you need me to do?
Yeah, man. That shit's crazy. Like some of those guys, man. Fucking.
And that's the thing about the military. This thing I really didn't like was, I mean, I understand you got to have respect for ranks and stuff like that. But like sometimes people would just be fucking awful at the job. And that's the thing about the Marine Corps. Everything in combat, in war, in exercises, anything we're doing outside of garrison, the Marine Corps is a well-oiled machine that runs extremely efficiently. I would never want to go to war with anyone except my Marines.
Right.
But when it comes back to being back in Camp Pendleton or being in back in the States, it's a fucking pageant. You know what I'm saying? Like how good you are at your job has nothing to do with you ranking up, with how you are perceived. It's all about your appearances, how fast you can run. Like, I went to war. I didn't run no goddamn where.
Right.
But apparently that was more important than me actually knowing how to do my job.
I was just get frustrated with the...
So it's like...
Yeah.
It was crazy. It was crazy, man. And it's people that are just idiots that are put in charge and you can't do anything about it because they outrank you.
Right.
You know, you try to tell them, like, hey, man, we should do this. And they're like, shut the fuck up. And they're like, I'm like, all right, man. And then when shit goes foul, they blame you. You're like, what the fuck? Well, you knew better. I'm like, you told me to do it.
Right?
You knew better than to do what I told you to do.
Man, I was telling you that we shouldn't do this, and now you're yelling at me for doing it.
Yeah.
That's what I loved about CB's, dude, is that, I mean, there are a lot of fucked up people in it no matter where you go.
Yeah.
There's always fucked up people. But we pretty much knew everybody, you know, in our small little community. So if somebody like about up to E5, if they're just paper tigers and they're fucking looking great with their boots and they got good running, but when it comes to running a project and welding and shit,
yeah,
you know, mm-hmm. you know, because like the thing with, I noticed this with bigger forces in the real fucking Navy and the Army is they're more like E5s in a special job than every E1 through 7 CBs. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So we could be like, oh dude, that guy is just a fuck. But he's just a fucking paper tiger, dude. And as soon as he transfers somewhere else, he's going to look great there. But for us, if you transfer somewhere else, be like, yo, hey, what do you know about SW2 O'Brien, dude? Oh, he's a good welder. He talks a lot of shit. He'll fight, but he's a fucking one of the best welders you got, you know, or something like that. Or Redinger's coming in. We know he's a badass welder and a good leader. Shit like that. So we already knew what was going on as you're transferring. But that's what's, that's why I felt bad because I'd see a lot of that stuff. I did most of my career worked alongside Marines off and on, you know, and then I would see a lot of that when you got to Pohang, Korea, because we'd have a lot of like, as like every 2 weeks, it seemed like another group of Marines were coming in on exercises, and I fucking loved you guys, dude, because they'd be like, hey, you want to shoot this? I'm like, it's a Barrett. Fuck yeah, I want to shoot this.
Yeah.
You know?
Just blow shit up.
I just weld like 5-10 minutes of doing some welding for a shell for you guys and the most grateful fucking people on earth. Like, dude, you want this? You want this? I'm like, yeah, of course. You know? So when did so did you just do the one deployment or you done more deployments or just
the one? It was to the tail end of my
got you.
Yeah. I got out in 04, so it was during the tail end of my having enough time in to go on a new...
Enough to deploy, but yeah, got
it. No, but like enough to just not deploy.
Like, oh, okay.
Just enough, just little enough time to where I... Because the stop loss had ended.
Uh-huh.
You know, when it was time for me to get out, the stop loss ended, and it wasn't enough time for me left for me to go back and then transition out.
Okay.
So I got lucky because I had no desire. I mean, I like the money and everything, but I don't want to die. I can't spend the money if I did, and I just had a baby.
Like I say, I can't spend the money if I'm dead.
Yeah.
That's true.
So, like, I just had a baby, and, you know, I really wanted to be back with my family. And yeah, man, I did my time. I didn't fucking run away from it. I was scared. I was scared shitless. You know what I'm saying? But I was like, yo, I'm a man of my word. If I say I'm going to do some shit, I'll do it. I didn't join the Marine Corps to go fucking fight a war. I just was going to get money for college, and I wanted to say I was a fucking Marine. You know? I wanted to seem badass. You know, that was my full intention, and I was going to get out because I joined during peacetime. I joined in 99.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's like I didn't expect to go do all this shit, and if it was a war, I wouldn't just join to go fight in a war. That's not my you know, that's not what I do. But I don't run from fights. I don't start fights, but I don't run from them. If you want to fucking get down, we can get down.
I felt similar, like, because, you know, coming in, I was in 96 and you were in 99, and it was just kind of like, God damn it. It looks like we're fighting. You know, it's like when your boy gets into a fight, you're like, motherfucker. Yeah. God damn, I was having such a good time. All right, looks like we're getting into a fight. Jeffrey Ruppel, you got to start run your mouth or, you know, I don't know, somebody. I'll just use Ruppel as
Jeffrey
name.
Ruppel.
God damn it.
Of the New Hampshire Ruppels.
Well, he's a Wisconsin boy. Same shit, anyways. But, shit, man.
Now, I was, the thing that scared me the most is how much shit that they gave us before we went, like, after 9/11, and then before we went to Afghanistan. It's like everything was free for us. Everything. And it's like, oh, man, we're going to go die. This is bullshit. I can get in everywhere for free. Like, even the Bunny Ranch, like, you just get whores. You get sandwiches,
like the first
anything.
50 like, or something they
yeah,
said.
You're like, fuck, man. It's like, you just get it. Oh, man, this is going to be rough. And sure enough, it was fucking, it was real. And that's the thing, man. It's so surreal. Like, I remember being over there, and it's like, this is life and death. And I didn't really understand it. I mean, I didn't really understand the gravity of what we were doing until I saw my first dead Marine.
Yeah.
Like, and this may sound callous, but it was a way for my mind to process the situation and what we had to do.
No, I understand fully.
What the Iraqi people were nothing to me. Like, they were just targets. They weren't even really people. They were objectives and targets, and I had no human connection to anyone in that country. You know, I didn't love them. I didn't hate them. I had no feeling. It was just robotic.
But it's the fucking job.
You know, man. And I feel like that was just the way of my mind processing what I had to do, the amount of destruction I had to, you know, be a part of in that country.
Right.
But when I first went, so me seeing dead Iraqis, and that didn't bother, even wounded ones didn't really bother, you know, me. But when I saw, you know, when I saw a dead Marine, that was the one that really, like, okay, this is serious. So it was like one of those situations where I have to do my job perfect.
Right.
Like, I have to do it perfect. I can't make I can't do my best. You know, that's not good enough. I can't try at anything. I have to execute and achieve everything that I try to do or I'm given. Because if I don't, Marines will die. Soldiers will die. Sailors will die. And I can't deal with that. I can't let that happen. So that was my whole mindset over there. You know, and it was like, it was almost like a dream state, you know. Because I was connected, but I really wasn't connected.
Well, it's so different than what we do here. And in, like, everyday life in the United States.
Yeah.
So it's just, it definitely feels that way. And I had lost one of my dudes while I was, it was before I went to Iraq, right? So, and I left, and I was stationed with this guy, Eric Knott, and we were in four together. And I could still, you know, hear the guys laugh, you know, good guy, you know, I still this day, I think about him, you know, and then like, and that was like when we went back, cause I went in 05, 06, I was with the Naval Mobile Construction Battalion 40, and we're in Camp Fallujah, in Camp Fallujah, but inside Camp Fallujah, you have like other little camps, you know, our camp was Camp Knott, named after my dude, you know? And that's when I was like, oh fuck, dude. Cause coming in and out, you know, I'd see his picture, shit like that. And then, another thing too is we'd have a lot of times Marines, like you guys, would go on convoys, and then we had CBs that did convoys too, and they had one little camps that would take forever, for fucking ever, just to get some up armor on you guys, you know, to get you guys right back out in the fight, you know, and do a turnaround. And I had a steel shop. I was like, look, don't tell too many people this, but if you guys are out in the fight and you need shit turned around, I'll get you guys done. I'm not going to say, I mean, I might say come back in a couple hours, but we're running my shop 24 hours, man. So yeah. I had a call sign. I think the call sign was Vengeance. These motherfuckers were in my shop like all the time with shit. You know, it seemed like, you know. So if you're in Vengeance, hit me up. I'll still do some welding if you need me to. But, you know.
Yeah, dude, our equipment is ass, man.
Yeah, it's like
we get the worst equipment. We get,
and we get your hand-me-downs.
Like, yo,
so.
we get the tough, like they give us the toughest mission and then with the worst equipment. Like, fucking, it was insane. Like, people were fucking freaking out. Like, I remember my buddy. He was a helicopter mechanic, and he's like, dude, this is fucking bullshit. We're fucking running all these missions, and people are asking for aircraft, and our shit's just falling out of the sky. We're not getting shot down.
Yeah,
our helicopters aren't getting shot down. They're just falling out of the sky because they're not. We like these engines aren't supposed to be running this many hours. We're supposed to be changing these engine outs, and we can't.
And plus, you got so much other dust and shit going through the filters. Like when you're up there, one of the biggest problems a lot of CBs were having, just a lot of going through filters and shit. So, like, when you were doing that leapfrogging and stuff, was that happening a lot then, too? Because was your supplies keeping up with you guys?
We had this, I don't know if he was Puerto Rican or Dominican, but those two are kind of interchangeable to me. If you're Puerto Rican or Dominican and you're offended that I said that, I don't care.
We'll call him Puerto Rican.
Because I was married to a Puerto Rican Dominican. I was in that family for years, so I could say it.
He's a Puerto Rican, so he had a Puerto Rican.
But this motherfucker, man, he would beg, borrow, and steal, and like he was wheeling and dealing. We were flush with everything, anything we needed.
Should have been a CB, man.
Dude, he was like fucking. He was our supply guy, man. He worked. Man, he was always coming with pallets of shit. Fucking like he always kept our. He was a fucking godsend, man. Like. We, like, and this is the forward. I was a part of the forward, and there was another group. Our unit was split in two, and then there was the main. The main, the motherfuckers were running out of food. Two dudes got sent back to the rear. I think they were going to get, one of them was going to get court-martialed because they were going about to shoot each other. It was all sorts of shit going on that one. And we were just like, he's like, oh, man, you've been running out of food. He's like, nah. Like, we were so flush with, we were so flush with food, like, we could make our own MREs, like, we just got what we want out of it, and then just
threw
the rest, and we had this big, huge, we call it rat fuck boxes.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Yeah, like, this is we had a massive rat fuck box where you could just make any cuisine.
It's all the shit you didn't want. You just throw it in the rat fuck box.
Yeah, somebody wanted it.
Hell yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, everybody knew what everybody liked, and you know what I'm saying? We were like, oh, man, we were living large up there. We always had water, like, fucking, like, tons of water, and fuel, everything. We never ran out of shit. Like, anything we needed, any equipment, he would find out what unit had what. He had a goddamn a network of other supply people that he's fucking working with, man. That dude was willing and dealing.
If you're cool shit happens, man. Yeah. So, you know, if you're just nice to other people, they're naturally gonna want to help you out, especially if you're like, yo, dog, we got this, you know. That's like, I don't know how many times I traded, like, command coins for fucking welding rods or some kind of random-ass shit, you know what I mean?
Some
people want a jalapeno squirt shit, and I got them that, and I got welding rods for it. What were you saying was crazy?
Nah, the thing about command coins, I didn't know shit about command coins until I got out of the military. Like, I never even dealt with that
right?
shit. I
always thought it was funny how people like held those to such a high standard.
Yeah, I didn't understand it. I didn't understand it. He's like, oh, to get a challenge coin. And I'm like, I felt bad. Like, I wasn't even in the military because motherfuckers would be talking about this shit and I didn't know. And I'd just be like, yeah, right?
Yeah. Oh, dude, I got this coin from this one place.
I'm like, that's cool.
Oh, right.
That's what's up. And then people would give me one and they would look at me like, you know, because I do a lot of shows. I perform with, actually, I'm doing a show tonight in San Diego. With the veterans of comedy.
Oh, hell yeah.
So we do shows and we do a lot of stuff with vets, a lot of VFWs and, you know, American Legion halls and stuff like that.
Is that what we'll see?
Yeah, that's what we'll see.
Cool, man.
And I was, one dude gave me a command coin and he gave it to me with so much pride. He looked at me like he was giving me his firstborn son.
$100 million, yeah.
And he's like, I want you to have this. And I'm like, okay. Thank you. Am I supposed to give something? Are we? Oh, we're hugging. Okay, we're hugging. All right. All right. All right.
This tip, tip.
This is kind of long. Oh, my God. I can hear his breath in my ear. This is rough. So it's like I don't know. There's certain parts of the military like I didn't, because I feel like the Marine Corps made me a better person, made me a better man.
Yeah.
And I would I wouldn't be the person I am today. I don't think I'd be a comedian if it wasn't for the Marine Corps. It gave me a lot of positive. It gave me a lot of positive character traits that I hold dear to this day. But at my core, I don't think, at my core, I'm an artist.
Yeah.
You know, the only reason I was able to be a Marine because I had a fucked up childhood.
Yeah.
And it was very violent. And I had a level of violence in me that translated to me being able to be a Marine. But at my core, I'm not like a fighter.
Okay.
You know, I'm not that guy that could have stayed in for a couple decades and
right.
really thrived in that environment, you know, because, you know, at the end of the day, I'm an artist, I'm a comedian, I'm a comic,
right.
I'm a writer, you know what I'm saying? I'm peaceful. I'd rather take
Should've
the
been
way
a CB
of
dog.
Least resistance.
No, I totally get it, man.
You know?
That's one of the things I miss about what I did. I mean, granted, we were in theater and we did a lot of that other shit, but the other part of the job was, you know, humanitarian assistance and like whenever there was a hurricane or an earthquake or mm-hmm. shit like that. So we went. Like, I had to send a crew to Haiti, like during the earthquake. And it was like, some of my guys were called body snatchers. So we went to house looking for people that were still alive to clean them out of the rubble and pull mm-hmm. them out and shit like that, you know? And so that's why, I don't know if you'd be interested in this or not, but that's why I help out with Team Rubicon. And with those guys, they're pretty cool cats. And they just deploy. So, like, the fires, like, right now, they're asking for people to go help out with the fires that are pretty close to us. When Houston was hit really bad, last year, I flew out to Houston, helped clean up some of the houses and shit like that. And it was funny, too, because former Marine, there's no former Marine, but Marine... Not Marine anymore, Jeff Parasolis. You know, that's kidding, man. Fucking, it's fine with Jeff.
Marine.
But Marine
not
in uniform anymore. Yeah. That was like Parasolis' like hometown like area.
Very funny
shit.
Comic too.
Yeah,
he's really Marine. Funny. He just did a show with me like a couple months ago here, that we did with the Veterans of Comedy. Fucking killed it, man.
Yeah, man.
Dude's angry hilarious.
Yes.
Like it's so dark, but it's so funny.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
but
funny.
It's just like I like how he just like gets into himself.
Yeah.
I don't know. He gets into I don't want to say get into the character. He just turns more Jeff.
Yeah.
You know? It's just you give him I guess like a microphone for him is like a power cord. It's
yeah.
just you plugged Jeff in. That's mm-hmm. what happened. Oh shit, we gave Jeff a microphone.
Well, that's what I think is, you know.
That's what's cool, man.
I'm being able to rant about the shit that we went through is it's helpful.
Yeah.
You know, and if you can make it funny, that's even better.
If you can actually tell people.
There's a chance that you can make a profit.
Make a profit and also give awareness to what the fuck is going on, you know. And that's another thing too, like with all the people, like the shit, the treatment that you get after. Have you been taken care of well by the VA? Or?
Oh yes, yes. Well,
cool.
Here's the thing. There's a level of responsibility that you have to take for your situation, you know. Because I went through a very rough time after I got out of the military. And to the point where I was a homeless crackhead.
All right.
That's basically what I was. And in order for me to get out of that situation, there was things that I had to realize about myself that I needed help with. And there was work that I had to do. And there's work that I have to do to this day. You know, there's veterans that feel that they deserve something that they didn't work for.
Right.
You know? And the VA, it will help you, but there's a level of tenacity that you got to have about. You have to be your biggest advocate. No one's going to fight for you the way you're going to fight for you.
True.
So you have to fight for yourself. And because the VA is not going to fight for you. That's just not what they're going to do. You know, they're not going to fucking just give you shit. You know, you have to work for that. You have to deal with bullshit. It's a bureaucracy. It's the government. Yeah. You know, so you're going to have to talk to 47 people for one thing. You know, you're going to have to give the same information over and over again. Yeah. And if you really want that help, if you really want a better life, if you really want to get out of the way you're feeling, you know, that's what you need to do. Because it's important. Like, this is one of the things I want anybody to know that's going through, you know, any sort of depression, addiction, PTSD, or anything like that. There comes a point where you have to make a decision that you don't want to feel like that anymore.
Right.
You have to want feeling better more than anything else. More than money, you know what I'm saying? More than being with your family. You can't do any of that until you fix yourself. And you have to want that shit. You have to want to be a different person. You have to want to be a better person. You have to want to be a positive influence in your own life. And if you don't want that shit, you're not going to get that shit.
Right.
Because it's difficult. And it's an everyday job. It's not something that you don't get fixed and you're done. It's just like being in shape. Like, you see Dwayne The Rock Johnson, he looks like a goddamn god because he works out like a fucking god.
Right. And that's like.
And he doesn't take days off. And that's the thing with my mental health and the things that I struggle with. I can't take days off. I have to do the things that got me healthy mentally, physically, and spiritually every single day. Mm-hmm. And everything else takes care of itself. My family takes care of my family life takes care of itself. You know, my social life takes care of itself. You know, my career takes care of itself because I've decided to do these things to make me a better person. And that's the only thing I need to focus on paramount.
So you're one of the first people that were like a little bit honest, more honest than most to me, you know, cause I was going through some bad shit, like not too long after I got out, and you're just like, dude, you go talk to somebody, man. You know what I mean? You know, yeah. I mean, like most people are like, oh, you'll be all right. You know, you're like, dude, you need to go talk to somebody.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, and it's helped. And that's the thing too, is like staying consistent with it. I mean, I fell off, obviously the weight thing.
Look at my fat ass. I can say all that, but I mean, I had some donuts today.
This is what we're doing right now. This is my form of therapy. You know what I mean? It's because I think we're helping other people. I'm hoping, you know, because like we get a lot of good feedback, and I'll forward anything that comes to you too.
But it's just
being able to talk to other people.
That's,
you know,
the thing. One thing that I've noticed about my anxiety, and it's always comes from something I want or something I need.
Okay.
You know, I'm never afraid for another person. When it comes to my anxiety, I'm always afraid I'm not going to get this job, or I'm not going to be able to pay rent, or my children won't love me. You know, like even my anxiety about my children is usually about me, about how they feel about me as a father.
How many kids do you have now?
I got two.
Two. Okay.
So when I start thinking about other people and how I can help other people and how I can be of service to somebody else.
Exactly.
Then there's no anxiety.
I see where you're going with this.
Because my energy is focused on helping them get out of their situation, and that doesn't scare me.
I totally agree. That's one of the things I always tell people when you're going through some shit, in my opinion, mm-hmm. you know, for what works for me, I just reach out and I don't talk about my issues.
Yeah.
You know, I just like, how you doing, man? And then if you know somebody else is going, because you can fucking see this shit on Facebook, everybody's like, you know, me too. I think anybody throws up their little red flag, whether it is like, oh man, this person's not going through some good shit, you know, whether she or he is, yeah. You know, reach out. And then that, you know, then you're automatically, like you're saying, you start connecting their dots, and you kind of forgot about how shit your dots are not connecting.
And also it's like, you gotta be, it goes back to the work as well. You know, it's like people post shit on Facebook about them being sad, because being sad is a comfortable place sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, being a victim, being depressed, that shit is comfortable. Because then you don't have to worry. Then it's not anybody else. It's not your responsibility. It's everybody else's responsibility. You know, you don't have to take ownership of the fact that you put yourself in that situation.
True.
And that's a hard pill to swallow.
True.
It's hard to fucking look at your life and be like, oh, shit, this is all my fault? This is bullshit. Wasn't it that? No, that was my fault too. But then they don't see the other side. The flip side of that is that the freedom you end up giving yourself when you realize that you fucked yourself over. So yes. As long as you have to do is change yourself, once you change yourself, then you can achieve anything. Anything. The whole world is open to you.
Yeah.
Because you're the fuck up. And if you can, if you're the fuck up, that's an easy fix. You just got to fix yourself. Yeah. And then everything else falls into place.
It's the best feeling.
It's the best. It's like, it was me. It was me the whole fucking time.
Especially when you know.
I'm Kaiser Sose.
When you fucked up, and then you go and you talk to your platoon commander, whomever it might be, and you're like, hey, I fucked up. You put that right out in front of anything else you say, they're like, oh, you know, instead of saying like, this is what's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, trying to cover up all your bullshit. Just come straight out. I fucked up. This is what we need to do to fix it. This is where I fucked up. Can you help me fix this shit? I fucked up. Boom. Like, oh, automatically, like, I can't be mad at you too much. And you came straight up and, you know, you said, you know, straight out, you fucked up. Okay, well, let's fix this shit. But yeah, just knowing that, because a lot of times, exactly what you're saying, man, a lot of times if there is an issue, then you've gotten half the problem out of the way of saying, well, what started it? Mm-hmm. Okay, well, if that's what you did, then just try to do
it. Even when somebody else is fucking you over, it's like, well, okay, how long am I going to let that guide what I do?
Right.
You know, how long am I going to let, you know, shit that my dad did to me affect my life as a 39-year-old?
That's,
you know, like, it's fucking, like, I'm worried about some shit that happened when I was 16. It's fucking stupid.
That's where a lot of times people are like, hey, he had a horrible childhood. Yeah, well, he's fucking 40.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I don't find that much as an excuse because you create yourself later, you know. And a lot of that, some people like being stuck in that whole repetitive system of, well, this happened to me, so it wasn't like that when I was younger, so let's do that now.
Well, there's a balance between compassion and accountability.
Yes.
You know? You can't go to somebody and be like, well, suck it up.
Right.
You know, there's a level of you can be like, well, if I could do it, you could do it.
Exactly.
We're all different. We all got different fingerprints. We all have different experiences. I mean, like, you have to, and there's a level of compassion that you have to have for yourself. Like, I feel this way because of this, and that's okay, but we have to do something different, you know? You have to allow yourself to feel like a victim, but you can't stay in that.
Mm-mm.
You have to process those feelings. You have to be like, yo, yeah, my shit was fucked up. Yeah, I got fucked over. Yeah, those guys are assholes. But what am I going to do today to make my life better?
Yeah.
You know, I can't stay there. I can't stay there because that's not real, because it's over. It's not real life anymore. What's today, you know, that's what's real. Things I could do today.
I'm not telling everybody they should stay sober and never have a drink or anything like that. But I am saying that, like, fucking, if you're just going to continuously just get high and fucked up, you're totally, like, not letting yourself feel anything. And then so later on in life, when you do feel, it's going to hit you a million times more, you know? And that's, like I said, I'm not trying to preach a program or anything like that, but I'm saying a lot of times, man, when shit's fucked up, the answer is not get fucked up, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I understand maybe the night of, you might want to get fucked up, but I'm saying don't stay on a fucking 6-month bender because, you know, shit's getting weird.
Well, I mean, you can't run from your emotions.
No.
You know?
You got to feel, man.
You got to feel. Like for me, like, I'll the reason that I'm honest about like my struggles with addiction is because I want to do this, you know. I want to be a comic, you know, and part of being a comic and being an entertainer meaning that your life becomes public property.
Yes.
So, people going to find out that I probably, like, the bigger I get, there's more chance that people find out that I fucking smoke crack in the alley.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, if I get in front of it and people are like, yo, you heard the Ebo was a crackhead? I'm like, yeah, he talked about it. Yeah,
we talked about it on Civilianization, episode 142 with Josh O'Brien.
He did 3 minutes on it in his Netflix special.
That's it, man.
So don't surprise anybody.
He did a half hour on Comedy Central alone.
So that being said, it's like, I've come to the realization that when I'm like, I have no problem with alcohol or drugs.
right.
being done. If that shit works for you, I root for you because I can't do it.
Right.
Because I don't know how to do it right. Like, I don't know how to fucking just drink. Like, the problem is with me and drinking is, like, people get drunk and they're like, oh, yeah, they have a good time. They party. I'm like, yeah, woo, all right. And they're like, oh, man, I got to go to work in the morning. They look at the clock and they fucking go home, go to sleep, wake up hungover, take some coffee and go to work. You know what I'm saying? Like, I get fucked up and I'm like, oh, man, this is fucking, oh, everybody leaving? All right, well, let me head down to the nearest homeless shelter, see if I can find somebody with some meth or crack. You know, my progression is fucked up. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, because
like, I drink and I use drugs to escape myself because I have problems with myself. Yeah. And in order for me to address those problems, I can't have alcohol or drugs in my system because they put me in a comfortable place that I really enjoyed. I really enjoyed that comfortable place that drugs and alcohol put me in. That shit was like a warm bed made of vaginas.
Yeah, the last 9 years of my career sober, my military career sober, just because I didn't want to go down a rabbit hole. You know what I mean? Because that's so easy to do.
Oh, man.
You know, and it's like I was one alcohol-related incident away from being a civilian with a very not good fucking discharge. Because, like, I love the party. I didn't care about fighting. I thought fighting was fun, you know, because it's basically a mosh pit with fists. That's all it was. You know, you're with your friends. Fuck it. Who cares? You know, you get lumped in the face a couple times. Well, you're going to give some out too and whatever. And most of the time I've ever been in a fight with anybody, I end up being friends like 3 months later. Like, And I miss that. I miss that part of the military where it's just like, you know, you talk shit, you stick up for each other, and you become friends because you got into a scrap. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And, but yeah, so that's the whole thing. And that's what I started realizing that a lot of the issues I had as a young man was able to deal with later on because when I started being sober because I was drunk almost every fucking day.
And that's some of the characteristics that the Marine Corps gave me, you know. I don't run from fights. I don't run from, you know what I'm saying, conflict. You know, I stand up and I stand my fucking ground. And that's part of what got me, you know, into a positive place is the ability and the bravery to look at a problem in my life and not run from it.
Right.
And be like, yo, I got to get fucking sober. This shit is my life is all fucked up. You know, and it's, you know whose fault it is? Me. Accountability. That's another thing that you learn in the military.
Accountability.
Yo, being able to look everybody in your life and be like, hey, it's not any of you guys' fault. It's me. I'm the fuck up, so I'm going to fix myself.
I always loved, like, people with good personal accountability when I was in because I could just look at them. Like, if they did something fucked up, I'd be like, oh, come in the office. Shut the door. Took out a yell. Dude, seriously. What the fuck? Right, when you leave here, we yelled. It was loud. I don't give a fuck. Don't do it again. Yeah. Right, bro? Thanks. Bye. And that's that. And it's, oh, man. I did want to say this, though. What I thought was funny, something about you and your optimism and good outlook on life was you posted this thing on Instagram, and it made me laugh, like, out loud laugh. You're like, locked out of my house. Man, can't believe I'm out of my house. But I got this ice cream. And you start eating the ice cream. And this is like, oh man, that made me laugh like really fucking hard. It was just funny.
Yo, I mean, like negative thoughts, man, they're unnecessary, you know? I mean, you don't have to stay in them. But also, sometimes you got to have them.
Yeah.
Like, and that's what I do. Like, my girl, she'll get like upset when, like, I'm yelling when I'm playing Call of Duty. I'm like, fuck you, motherfucker. You ain't shit. Like, I'm like, just yelling. I'm like, fuck, this is fucking stupid. And then she's like, hey, you're getting worked up. I'm like, yeah, I fucking need to.
Am.
That's why, because you know what? She's like, you shouldn't take. I'm like, I don't have to do a goddamn thing, but feel the way the fuck I feel right now.
Yeah.
Because once this is over, I'll be fine.
Yeah, that's
and
like.
And she's like, are you having fun? I'm having a great fucking time.
Fuck yeah, I am, goddamn it.
And that's it. I get mad. Like, if somebody pisses me off, they pisses me off. I'm not going to act like I like somebody when I don't.
No.
You know what I'm saying? I'm not going to act like I'm cool with somebody. Like, I'm not going to act like I forgive somebody when I don't forgive them. I do everything, you know what I'm saying, honestly. Because
it's
that's a good way
it.
To live, I think.
You know,
I what I'm saying? It's like, dude, like, I had a beef with somebody that I knew. And he came up to me. And he's like, hey, Ebo. I'm like, why the fuck you talking to me, man? I don't fuck with you. Don't. Yeah. Ain't no. We're gonna do. You don't like me. I don't like you. We're not gonna pretend like we homies. You know what I'm saying? When we really get to that place, we'll be at that place. But right now, man, I don't even want to talk to you. You know what I'm saying? All disrespect. All disrespect. Yeah. Ain't no disrespect. I don't like you. And then eventually, it took months, eventually came to the place where we were able to be actual friends. And that came, and us being friends like that means that we trust each other. We right. trust that we're saying the real shit to each other. So he could come to me with stuff, and he knows that I'm trustworthy, and I'm going to be honest, and I'm not going to feed him no bullshit, because we came to friendship from an honest place.
No, that's, you know, so, and it was honest, so forgiveness. Fucking true.
Yeah. So
remember I was throwing names out earlier. I was talking about the good leader, Jimmy Redinger. Yeah. I remember when you said that, we were in Gulfport, Mississippi, going through our A school. It's basically our MOS school for welding. And we're formed up, getting ready to do PT one morning. So he looks at me, he's like, "Well, Brian, I just don't like you." And then, like, after that, we ended up we got shafted. We're supposed to fly out of New Orleans, but instead of flying out of New Orleans, they still made us go fly out of Gulfport. So I got my ticket to New Orleans to fly from New Orleans there. And we ended up supposed to wait for a bus to get to Gulfport, Mississippi. So we had a hotel room, hung out like the whole night. He and I, two guys that really didn't like each other at this point, we just didn't dislike each other. And then there's probably very few people that I know, no matter what happens in this world, if I called him, like, "Yo, dog, he'll be there." You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's one of them. And I think a lot of it, too, is, like, that shit coming from an honest place.
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't, dude, what,
and
why?
There's friends like that. And that's thing, the best. In the military, you get forced together with people.
Those are people.
You get to be able to live in uncomfortability.
Yeah.
Lots of people can do. That's why people force these smiles and act like they like people. That's why everybody's so Hollywood around. People are Hollywood all over America.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
Nobody likes to be in an uncomfortable situation. Nobody likes to sit in a room with somebody they don't like or tell somebody, like, "Look, I just don't like you."
Oh.
You know? And like, right. In the military, you'll be sitting like, "Hey, man, hey, chief, what the fuck is the problem?" You know what I'm saying? He's like, "You know what? I just don't like you. I don't like you as a person. I think you have a horrible moral compass."
Yeah.
And these are just the ways I feel. I'm like, all right.
And then you're like, "Oh, well, maybe that's why I'm fucked up." Okay. And yeah. Then that, just like I was saying earlier, dude, you get into fucking fist fights with people, mm-hmm. and then those are your best friends later on. So I know you got to get down to San Diego, so we'll wrap this up. Is there anything you want to plug? Anything like that you got going on?
Oh, well, yeah. Of course, we mentioned it at the top of the show. Come check me out at Twitch TV, Comedy Store, noon every day. I'm probably not going to do Saturday anymore because I got another commitment, and it's hard for me to get here. So I might set it off, but Sunday through Friday,
okay.
Catch me at noon. Also, follow me on my YouTube page. It's Ebo, one word, comedy, one word, Ebo comedy. Subscribe. I got a lot of funny videos, clips, stand-up, and everything like that. And, yeah, follow me on IG as well.
So what was your IG one more time?
Ebo comedy, all one word.
Okay. And, you know, I remember, I know you for a while, and even when I didn't know you, I just knew you were a Marine. So, you know what I mean? So, this guy's cool. So I was calling you the wrong name for the longest time. I was calling you Ibo, you know, because that's how you spell it. And then I was like, "Oh, Ebo?" I'm like, "Oh, yeah." You know what I mean? So,
yeah.
All right. Well, fucking, hey, same Josh, 96 O'Brien, all that other fun shit. I'm dropping a sprint car in Fremont, Ohio on New Year's. Doing two shows with the VFW there. One's at 6 and one's at 9, Fremont, Ohio. So if you're a fan of, I picked up another podcast. So I do the Comedy Stores. Check that out. I do help Sam Tripoli's with his, and I just picked up Kurt Metzger's. So I'll be doing his too. So that's cool. Thanks for listening. For all those I followed, thanks for making me a better leader. For all those I've led, thanks for making me go for it.
I'm doing a show with Kurt Metzger, actually.
Metzger's the shit,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, we're doing a show on the 10th. At Tree Fort Studios on Sunset in
Fuck
LA.
Yeah.
So,
it's a good dude, right? Yeah.
10th of January.
10th of January. Okay, cool. Let me see if I can get a guest spot on that shit. I'll hit both of you guys up. Hey, you might see me on the 10th of January. Where at?
Oh, actually, you know what? There's a VFW show in Ventura and in mid-January. I think it's the 12th. So I don't know. I'll give you more details off air, but as soon as I know more details. If you want to go up with me, I'll drive.
Oh, yeah, for
in
sure.
Ventura. It's for VFWs. It's fucking... So this,
just let me know.
Sure. All right. Fuck yeah. Awesome.
All right.
So once again, for those I follow, thanks for making me a better leader. For those I've led, thanks for making me a better person. And thanks for tuning in and checking out the show. Blah, blah, blah. Rate, subscribe, whatever. Let's go, like, let's go listen to some CB shit. Right. CB song. Peace. Go.